It is a Friday and tons to get into with Ben Fredrickson. As always, this is brought to you by the good folks at Henderson and Watercutty, STLCriminalDefense.com, STLCriminalDefense.com. It was this time last week. We did not know the situation with the St. Louis Cardinals, and the Cardinals spent 6 days quarantined in Milwaukee, but now we have baseball back on the field tonight with the Chicago Cubs coming to St. Louis, the Blues playing last night. There's some news concerning college football. Ben Fredrickson joins me every Friday on Scoops with DannyMac.com. To say the least, Ben, it's been an interesting Friday and an interesting week. Always good to visit with you. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you, and hope you are as well. And, man, you nailed it. I feel like it's opening day 2.0 right now. Just a surreal time to be covering the Cardinals. And in this kind of, this convoluted attempt for sports to come back, there have been some successes, there have been some setbacks, but – here we are, and I think the Cardinals right now are just thrilled to not be stuck in a haunted hotel in Milwaukee. Certainly should start by saying, hey, we're want the guys who have been diagnosed positive to get back ASAP, and most importantly to be feeling better for those who are suffering from the symptoms, including the staff. I mean, you think about those guys as much as you do the young in shape ball players, probably even more so. Good that the Cardinals got through this. Good that they were able to get their arms around the scope of the outbreak here. And now they're able to, supplement the team with guys from Springfield and see how it looks. It's a tall order for this team to lose Yadier Molina and Paul DeJong. Throw in some of those other names there and it makes it tougher, but they're up against it, against the team and the Cubs that have been rolling, other than a bad loss in Kansas City last night. But I don't really know how we say what to expect, because we didn't expect to be covering a season like this, and we certainly didn't expect to be covering a team that has spent the better part of a week locked in a hotel room without being able to practice. So I'm not sure what we're going to see on the field tonight.
I do find it fascinating. I mean, the Cardinals yesterday had a little bit of a sim game. The day before, it was the first time they literally were outside of their room. So trying to be sharp, whether you're at the plate or on the mound, I just don't know how sharp they can be, and that's what we're going to see tonight. I just don't know what to expect when the Cardinals take the field tonight. I don't think Mike Schilt really knows, or the players would know, how sharp they could really realistically be going into this game tonight.
Well, there's kind of two ways to look at it. One is there's going to be probably some bounce in their step just because they're happy to be playing again. I don't think you underestimate that, and kind of look at what the Marlins have been able to do since they've returned. They were clearly happy to be back out there. The other way to look at it is exactly fair point is, baseball is such a schedule-oriented, routine-oriented sport that when you sit those guys down for 5 days without letting them leave their hotel, then it's going to be tough to flip a switch. And then beyond that, you've got the fact that some key figures are not there. This was not a lineup that had an extra amount of runs, going into this shutdown, Dan, and now it's lost two of their top six hitters, including their cleanup hitter who was locked in. I thought Yadi, results included or not, had just looked very sound at the plate, and he's going to be missed in so many more ways than just offense. I mean, runs that he minimizes with his handling of the staff and the defense, and he's their leader, he's their compass. So when he's not out there, that's huge. So there's some talent setbacks. There's going to be some morale setbacks with those guys not in there. And then there's just the rust factor. And on top of that, the health factor. We've seen, unfortunately, an uptick of injuries this season in pitchers and in soft tissue, because of the schedule changes that have taken place. And this situation really heightens the awareness of that. And I think the Cardinals will respond accordingly. I think we're already seeing that by not having Jack Flaherty start this game. Daniel Ponce de Leon has pitched more recently than Jack. They're going to try to ease certain guys back into it a little bit because they've been shut down. So for folks who can't understand that, I guess the only way you can explain it is to go sit in a hotel room for that many days and then come out and try to go do something physical. These guys it's going to take them a minute just to feel normal. So this will be a very abnormal game in a lot of different ways. And it's going to be abnormal for the fans because this season while it was always weird, was a typical Cardinal season, that this team was supposed to contend. It was supposed to repeat, you know, have a chance to repeat as champions of the division. And right now, I don't know that I can say authentically that those expectations stand. We don't know when some of these guys will be back. The Cardinals right now have had more postponed games than they have had games played. And they've got a serious kind of serious smash of games here of doubleheaders. And this is going to be hard, even if they were fully healthy. Even if these guys do get back when they're supposed to, we're not quite sure. So it's a bit of an abnormal season for Cardinals, but also their fans as well, because we're all kind of trying to figure out what exactly, how to analyze it, how the fans should watch it, how the journalists should write about it, because we're not in this position very often where there could be a season where the Cardinals are not, you know, suddenly not all that competitive.
I think Mike Schilt, he's so good at communicating. He talked about what he did with his players during the quarantine, just constantly trying to communicate with those that were sick or had contracted the virus, trying to communicate with those that didn't, trying to talk to guys during that time that they were literally in their hotel rooms, kind of trapped, if you will, couldn't leave their rooms, ordering, by the way, double fries with ranch, which he enjoyed. He said he enjoyed that. Not to make light of the situation, but that's what he did. You know, I think he, because this is the kind of guy that he is, he will say, look, it's not an excuse. This is big boy stuff. This is the hand we've been dealt, and we go for it. We go for broke. That's just the kind of guy he is. I'll be fascinated how he handles this kind of situation.
Totally. And look, you know, one thing about Schilt and his players is they're not going to go, okay, we're without key guys, let's go over there and roll over. The Cardinals haven't done that. They don't do that. That's one of the things that we can cross off the list of possibilities. However, they are going to be at a competitive disadvantage for a lot of different reasons. They're trying to make up a ton of games. They're without key players. So their back's up against the wall, and sometimes that leads to inspired play. I mean, baseball is such a weird sport that you can almost never write off a team and say, okay, this is over for them. And I certainly have learned not to do it with the Cardinals ever. But they've never really experienced a situation like this either. I think John Mozeliak was telling the truth when he was, you know, asked about, hey, how do you expect to, you know, I don't want to put words in his mouth, the paraphrasing what he was said, look, being competitive right now, this first series back, is maybe not as high on the list of priorities as keeping guys healthy, as getting guys back out there as it normally would be. And some people will bristle at that comment, but I think he's just being candid. There's not really a playbook for how to handle something like this. So you have to view this series in a bit of a different light. I mean, this was supposed to be a massive series for the Cardinals. The Cubs come into town, the first meeting between the rivals in a 60-game season where every game kind of feels, it's almost more like a football game, you know, where it has that kind of implications if one game really boils down to basically being 2.7 games. So I think some of that has been replaced with just this unknown. We're not, again, not quite sure. You could see the Cardinals having this burst of energy and, hey, let's go win one for the guys who aren't here. And then you could see how this could kind of snowball on them. And I don't know how that's going to play. We just can't predict that. And so much of this season has been unpredictable. So if you're looking on the baseball aspect of it, there's some interesting things. I think you're going to get a chance to get a good read on Andrew Kisner. I would like to see him get most of the starts now, because I think it's time to find out what he's got as, you know, kind of the heir to Yadier. If now's not the time, I don't know when is. You know, you're going to see Tommy Edman at shortstop. We didn't see him there once last season, and you and I have talked about this before. You know, he played there a ton in the minors, but it's been a while since he played there and has never gotten a rep there in the majors, so that's going to be a pretty significant factor. And then I think, once again, the discussion about the outfield will pick right back up. I hope personally the Cardinals would say, okay, let's give the fans a pick me up and let's use that DH spot to throw in Dylan Carlson into the mix. The Cardinals are deciding against that for now, but that conversation is going to be right there. And I think we're going to see a lot of Lane Thomas here. So again, there's things to analyze, but you can't realistically look at the situation and go, okay, they're a better team or have a chance to be the team they could have been when they're losing some of these guys for an undetermined amount of time.
Yeah. Lane Thomas, I'm curious how they handle because he has only made one start. So I'm curious about his run and Bader's run, how they start to integrate Brad Miller, who we haven't even seen since spring training. Does Austin Dean start to get some at-bats and, you know, starting to ride the hot hand, because you're going to have a ton of games coming up and not many off days. So that's something that you got to think about as you go forward.
Yeah, and hopefully, fingers crossed, guys stay healthy beyond COVID in terms of just the amount of games and the kind of making up for lost time in the schedule after some off days. This is strange territory for a lot of these athletes and a lot of their muscles. So I just hope that holds up, because the worst thing for the Cardinals would be more injuries on top of this virus related setback. So, and again, we should zoom out enough to go, okay, how is the league going to respond? Because I think the league is to the point now where it's got, you know, the Marlins and Cardinals are back in play. And it's taken some lumps here when these teams have been on the road. We've seen these new protocols come out, and it's going to be a lot stricter. We've already seen from the Cardinals that these past two practices have some things they've changed on the field. I don't think they need to be taught any more about the importance of really going above and beyond when it comes to protocol. But if the league gets another 2 to 3 teams in this same setting at the same time, where you've got, you know, a third to half of your games postponed and not playing, then that might be too much for them to press on through. So not just the Cardinals are in a bit of a unknown point right now. I think this next week and a half for the league is going to tell us if these, you know, really double down and strengthening of protocols are going to help the league get more games in without setbacks. Because if the team outbreak rate continues at what it's at right now, then it probably won't matter what this team's going to do, because I think we'll be looking at a shutdown.
In terms of KK going back to the roster, you like that move?
Yeah, man, the rotation, I thought he should have been there from the beginning. I you and I talked about it. My preference would have been to have Carlos as the closer. It's a tough thing to judge Carlos specifically on that one start against the Twins where he got lit up, because that lineup's going to light up a bunch of starters. But I like KK as a starter. I think that's going to be a more comfortable spot for him, and I'm eager to see what he does. I would guess, you know, you're going to see Ryan Helsley get the chance to shut the door in save situations, and he's got the stuff, doesn't have much experience, but now's the time. I mean, you're going to see a lot of unproven players. I mean, I say rookies or young guys, and technically KK is a rookie, right? A veteran rookie, but how the Cardinals hang tough here is going to depend a lot on guys in unfamiliar spots. Helsley at the back end of the bullpen, right? KK in the rotation, Edmund at shortstop, where he hasn't played in the majors, the young outfielders. This is going to be, that's to me is going to be the story of the season right now. It's how can unproven guys in spots they're not all that familiar with, how can they help keep the Cardinals afloat until they start getting some of these guys back?
In terms of the St. Louis Blues, let's switch gears now. The Blues lose again last night. So it's been the Hawks, it's been the Avalanche, and now Vegas. So they've gone to the bubble. They haven't won a game since they've gone up to Canada. What did you think of the game last night?
It was kind of a repeat, I felt like, of their first loss in the bubble. Again, I said this last night on Twitter, and I mean it. My panic level for the Blues is now behind like 5 layers of Ruby-proof glass. I don't reach for it very often, and I'm not reaching for it yet. I like that Ruby chewed on him a little bit in the post game last night. I think it was deserving, and I think that they should respond. If they're the Blues team that they were, you know, entering the shutdown, then they will respond. They're putting too much on Jordan Binnington. Their defense beyond Binnington is not their signature style. And even when the offense looked a little better, like it did last night, they're just too porous in front of the goalie. They're asking him to do too much. I think the silver lining is that Binnington has played great. He was probably, you know, a little bit of a question mark heading out of the shutdown. Colorado had certainly had his number, but he's looked great in these games. They just got to do a better job in front of him. They got to get back to their style. It's not a complicated style, but it takes buy-in and effort, and they've got to be willing to leave it out there. And I think they just look like a team that doesn't quite have their legs underneath them like they need to. But they're also, you know, since we've known them to be championship contenders, they've been a team that plays better when they know there's no safety net. And right now they have one. these games for seeding are great. I like that they're giving these guys that are already in something to play for, but I don't think seeding matters much in this tournament. So I'll be interested to see how the Blues get their act together for this final seeding game. They've obviously lost, I think, the chance to be the number one seed here, but how they play when there's an elimination on the line, I think, is going to matter a lot more than how they play in these first three games in the round robin.
I just think defensively they have not, they just haven't been moving as well. They just seem to be a tick off, a little bit slow. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, kind of heavy legs, or I mean, I don't want to. I'm hesitant to question effort because I don't think very many of us can imagine what it's like to go like these guys did, where they play, take such amount of time off, and then all of a sudden have to kick it back up to be in postseason gear here. So I won't say it's effort, but I think they're kind of getting into game shape on the fly in front of our eyes here. And fortunately, they can have a time to do that without having the risk of going home. And that's probably the biggest advantage of being a team in these round robins, is you get a taste of it before you have to fully turn it on. So, you know, they just got to get back to their foundation. And I think we're seeing them try to move in that direction, but they're not there yet. And they just got to get back to that hard forechecking, you know, physical team that just wears on teams throughout the game, and they're not quite there yet. But the good news is Bennington looks locked in. They should be able to get the rest up to snuff. I'm not panicking yet. I understand folks are starting to reach for that button, but I'm not going there quite yet.
In terms of NCAA football, we've got some regulations looking ahead, and it's right around the corner. Do you think we play football this fall?
Well, I think you're going to have to pry it out of the hands of the Power Five conferences. I think what we're going to see is that the big boys are going to attempt to play, and those who cannot, you know, make money by playing on TV without fans will not. That's what I think is going to happen. We've already seen some of the lower divisions cancel their fall schedules. No surprise there. We've seen a school like UConn say, "Hey, we're not doing it this fall." UConn is barely a Division I football program. They've not been very successful in their picking up of the sport, and it hasn't gone all that well, so that's not shocking. But the SECs, the Big Tens, the Big 12s of the world, they're going to try to play. And we've seen some guidelines now from the NCAA. After being asleep at the wheel for too long, the NCAA woke up and said, okay, we better get some stuff out there. And I think what they have done, to their credit, is smart. You've got the testing protocols. You've got things in place that if a player wants to opt out, their scholarship is protected, which you absolutely have to do. And they've dropped this nonsense about signing away legal rights based off of some COVID waiver for unpaid student athletes, which was never going to stand up, I don't think, in the court of law anyway. So they've made some smart changes there. This is going to come down to, I think, how well schools can do it. If there's an outbreak on a team and it has to shut down, you know, one of the benefits of playing these conference-only schedules is that they'll be able to move things around. But if kind of like baseball, Dan, where if you have so many outbreaks at the same time where you can't play any games, then it becomes pointless pretty fast. So I'm not ready to say it's going to work, but I do think they are absolutely going to try.
You think the players, you know, they're trying to almost unionize with this? Do you think it happens in this regard?
Well, they can, if they stick together, they can get some health and safety protocol things changed. We've seen that in the Pac-12 and in the Big Ten. I wouldn't be surprised if we see something in the SEC. The Pac-12 is a little different because they're kind of trying to wrap in some different elements. They're asking to be, you know, an increase in cost of living stipends. They're tying in some of the social justice conversation. All of these things are fine ideas. But I think if they're looking for meaningful change in that, they're going to have a hard time getting those enacted before the season starts. I think the groups that focus solely on health and safety protocols are going to have more luck there. And I think, too, that schools are in some ways doing themselves a favor by including this opt-out, where they can say, hey, if you're going to play, you're going to do it on our terms. If not, you can opt out and have your scholarship protected. So I think that's kind of a fallback more so than it is a plus for players. It's kind of a protection for the schools. Either do it on our terms or don't do it at all. The other thing that we're seeing, Dan, and we should mention this, is more and more top college players are saying, hey, we're opting out. We're going to prepare to go to the league. We've seen that, and I think that's going to continue. If you're for sure first round draft pick, and you feel like maybe your season is, maybe it's too risky to risk getting the virus into having, you know, having complications from it, than it would be just to train on your own and jump straight into the draft. We're seeing some guys do that. And I think if top NFL prospects feel like their program isn't doing a good job of handling, you know, virus prevention, then we could see that. So that's something to keep in mind too. There could be some of the superstars of the college game that aren't out there. Most players need to play, want to play to try to create, you know, draft awareness and help their draft stock, to try to improve their standing on the team, to try to build that for the future. So most guys are going to, I think, play. But I do like that there is an option for guys who don't want to have their scholarship protected. I think that has to be what it started with. It shouldn't have taken as long as it did, but I'm glad they put it in.
A little birdie told me, Ben, that you have become best friends with The Rock, and you're trying to finagle a position with the XFL. Is this true?
Well, I am a big fan of the show Ballers. So,
are you really?
I like the show.
Oh, come on.
So I'm willing to, all I said was I'm willing to shave my head so I can be like the VP. You know?
You did that in the quarantine.
I rocked it fine. So I can just,
that's your opinion.
Just do that. And we'll throw parties on yachts.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
What?
You said you rocked it fine. That's a play on words, number one. Number two, that's your opinion, okay, that you rocked it fine. My opinion was, it was a unique look, and I'm being kind.
That's a nice way of putting it. So it's like, remember when Colton Wong was recruiting Giancarlo Stanton to the Cardinals, and he said, "You're like the rock, and I'll be the pebble."
Yes, I remember.
It was a great. So that I'm using that same pitch now. I'll just be the rock's pebble if he wants to set up XFL headquarters in St. Louis.
All right.
Look, the state of media is an unstable place. You always got to be have your eyes on the lookout for other opportunities. You know how it is, Dan.
Oh, no, I haven't felt that way at all.
So I don't know, man. So what is this story? And I'll be honest here. I've slipped a little bit on my understanding of where the XFL lawsuit / bankruptcy sale is, but the Rock and a partner have swooped in to, I guess, you know, if all goes according to plan, he's going to be the owner of the league. Now, what's he going to do with it? He's not said. So I hope that this could be good news for Battlehawks fans, considering that if you're going to have any sort of the league, then you've got to have St. Louis with the team, considering it was like the bell cow of the entire operation. So I'm hoping this is good news, although we don't quite know for sure what The Rock wants to do with this. I guess I should call him Dwayne Johnson because his name's not technically The Rock, but we don't quite know what he wants to do with it. But that's what I want to try to find out. So if anybody has any good ideas on like how to get a hold of Dwayne Johnson, then they should let me know.
Good. Okay. I don't.
Did you ever call any wrestling?
I would at this point. Hey buddy, I'm open for business.
You'd be good at it. That you're nimble enough. You could get in there, like you could kind of play along. If they wanted to come rough you up, you could take a slam through a table or something.
Absolutely. I was a big fan of wrestling at the Chase.
Sure.
I'm a big fan of Larry Munchnick. I thought his work was exemplary over the years. I thought the Von Erichs were awesome. You probably don't know who the Von Erichs were.
Well, no, but so my dad is from Eldon, Missouri, right?
Okay.
So one of the coolest things I used to think about Eldon was when we would go to visit like my grandma, and my dad would take me past downtown and he'd show me Harley. That's where Harley Race, man. Wrestling Academy was.
Yeah.
And like some of the greats trained there, and it obviously moved to St. Louis later in his life, and he, you know, recently passed, but that was one of like the coolest things about going to Eldon was like you get to go by the Harley Race Wrestling Academy.
I'm telling you, man, you got to find some of the old tapes of wrestling at the Chase. The best. Okay. I'm just telling you. I mean, during this time where a lot of the studios maybe haven't been putting out great content and it's been put on hold, people have been looking for content to watch. If I were you, and I know you're a smart guy, you're very bright, educate yourself on wrestling at the Chase. And maybe you should write an article on it and say, I was a great friend of mine, you know, turned me on to Wrestling at the Chase, and here's what I came up with. I'm just telling you, man.
All right. So if there's no college football this fall,
yes,
we can make a request to have the best of Wrestling at the Chase re-aired.
Yes.
Every Saturday afternoon.
Yes. It's awesome stuff.
We've solved it.
And I would be happy if there's a sponsor out there and wants to recreate it and we can get it aired. I'm in.
This is turning. See, this is why you're my friend. You take all my harebrained ideas and you turn them into business opportunities.
You got to be thinking. There's always opportunities to try to make some money, my man. Especially in these times.
I love it.
All right, my man. Well, you're going to be at the ballpark tonight?
I'm going to be there, man. Looking forward to seeing you from a safe distance.
I'll be honest. Do you think it's going to be kind of emotional for fans to watch tonight, even as I said this the other day to somebody. I almost think it's going to be more emotional tonight for some than even opening day. I don't know why, but I do think it might be like that for fans. I don't know why, but I do.
Well, yeah, I mean, season on a brink, and I think everybody for a while thought that could be the curtain call for Cardinals baseball in 2020. So when you get some of that back, even if it's in a different form,
yeah,
then it's appreciated. So yeah, I mean, this whole season, man, it is not similar to anything else we're ever going to cover.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been around a lot longer than I have, and that's not me calling you old.
It's okay.
Cause you're actually pretty young.
Well, I used to be the young guy. That's okay. I like being the older guy. So I'm okay with that.
But you've covered some highs and some lows, man, but this is nothing like this.
No, it's nothing like this.
It's kind of surreal. I keep reminding myself of that it's, you know, you can't view it through a normal lens because nothing is normal right now.
No, it's not. Awesome stuff. Love doing this every Friday, and always great to catch up with you, and I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next Friday too.
Sounds good, brother. Talk soon.